Morning, Lynn. How are you?
Good morning. Yes, I'm fine, thank you. Another beautiful day.
Yes, it's really nice. I thought it was going to be a bit thunderstormy today. That's what you said, but we're lucky to have the sunshine out. So can you just tell us a little bit about yourself, Lynn, and how you got involved in working in Sierra Leone?
Yeah, so I'm a practice nurse. I lived and worked in Cirencester for a long time, and I have two sons who both currently live abroad, who both went to Deer Park. I have been practicing nurse, as I say, for a very long time, and the senior partner from our practice is also a friend of mine called Rohit Setty. Went to Sierra Leone about 12 or so years ago, and as a result set up the charity Help Medina when he came back, along with his wife and his sister-in-law. And as a practice, we've been involved with that charity over the years, doing bits of fundraising when he's given talks and things. And then I'm also a member of Cirencester Rotary Club, and as a club we fundraise for local charities. We also fundraise for international charities, and Medina has been our charity now for some years, because we wanted to take on a bigger project. To start with, because of the size of the charity, there was no way that any extra people could go to Medina, really. But 3 years ago, I was fortunate enough to be able to go.
Superb. So did you go for, how many weeks did you go for?
I went for 2 weeks.
2 weeks. And was that your first experience of West Africa?
Yeah, the only other place I've been to in Africa a long, long time ago was Morocco. So I'm not sure that even quite counts. But
okay.
Yeah, so my first experience.
And so in terms of preparing to go to West Africa, is there anything you had to do, vaccinations or sort of like preparing yourself for that cultural change, or the sometimes we talk about culture shock and how going into a different environment, you know, it can really sort of be an attack on the senses. So how did you prepare for that?
Absolutely. I mean, I do love to travel, and I have been to quite a lot of places, and I've spent quite a lot of time in Peru, so sort of slightly prepared in some ways, but not for an African country. Yes, you need vaccinations. You have to have a yellow fever vaccination, and at the airport they have, as well as passport control, they have a yellow fever control station where you have to show your yellow fever certificate. And if you haven't got a certificate, we always tell patients when they have their yellow fever vaccinations, your certificate is almost more important than the injection, because they can keep you there and jab you and quarantine you for 2 weeks.
Wow.
So it's not a good experience. So definitely need your yellow fever. And there are other vaccinations as well that are recommended. And also you need to take malaria tablets, because you are right in the middle of a malaria belt. And malaria is one of the biggest killers of small children in the middle belt of Africa.
Yeah. So in terms of the location, so on the screen you'll be able to see that we've got two maps. And you can see the location of where Sierra Leone is located in terms of Africa. So that's sort of Western Africa, sort of like the bulge of Africa. And then the second map gives us a bit of an indication that it's on the coast. So obviously the Atlantic coastline is important there. And it's got a border with Guinea to the north and Liberia to the south as well. So in terms of, some people may be involved in the Ghana trip next year, because since 2016, I think, Miss Blewett, 2016, sounds about right? Was it
2017 was our first trip.
2017, we've been running a trip to a project in Ghana, and again, you can see sort of like the location of Sierra Leone compared to Ghana, and in terms of you know, a West African nation. So what we want to find out is a little bit more about what you thought about Sierra Leone. So Lynn, what preconceptions did you have about Sierra Leone before you visited? What did you think it was going to be like?
I knew it was going to be poor. And a lot of poverty. I expected, I don't know, big open plains and things like you see on the television, like, you know, you see from places like Kenya and the bigger countries. I mean, Sierra Leone is you know, it's a tiny country, really. And it only has a population of about 6 million. So that's sort of what I expected. I knew that they had had a civil war, which had destroyed a lot of the country and a lot of the infrastructure, and which had taken them time to get back on their feet.
Yeah.
That's about it, really. I was expecting maybe to see some big animals and things, but nothing.
Like big fives and things like that. So, yeah, so really, really interesting then. So the preconceptions, or perhaps some of the preconceptions that we may have about Africa as a continent, and like the savannah and that sort of like Lion King landscape type thing, you know, the roaming animals and things. And in terms of the poverty, the connection to the Civil War, which obviously took place for 10 years, and that is going to have a dramatic impact on the level of development within the country that was actually there. So in terms of how you can compare it, this little diagram here shows you, as a nation, it's around about the same size as the Republic of Ireland, and a really fantastic website for geographers to use is a place called ifitweremyhome.com, and what it does is it allows you to compare Sierra Leone to any other country. So again, it gives us a bit of an indication that death rates are higher, infant mortality could be is higher, less access to electricity, less access to healthcare, more of a divide, less consumption of oil. So we start to get this idea of how it may compare to the UK, but it's really valuable for when you do some independent study to be thinking about how you can compare it to another African nation. So say, for example, somewhere like Ghana would be a really interesting one to look at there. So this is a picture of you, Lynn, in the project. So can you tell us a little bit about where in Sierra Leone that you actually focused in on and where you've worked?
The picture in the middle at the top, you can't see it there, but I am actually crying at the time.
Oh.
You can't fly directly to Sierra Leone from the UK anymore. Before Ebola you could, since Ebola you can't. You have to fly either Paris or via Amsterdam, and then fly down to Freetown. So it's then a four-hour ride in a four-wheel drive from Freetown to can't think of the name of the place now, to Cambia, and then it's another 4 hours on red rutted roads to down to Medina itself. So the part of the reason for me going was to do some nursing work, but also to find a project for Rotary to really get their teeth into. And when you arrive, you always have a meeting with the village elders to say, you know, that you're here and why you're here and what they want from you, basically. And there was a lady who stood up and she said, I am the head of the preschool, Roman Catholic preschool. And she said, it's falling down and we need help. So this was the beginning of our fortnight. So I went to see, I went with her to see this preschool, and basically she's right. It was falling down. The picture on the bottom left is actually there as a roundabout for the children to play on. There were holes in the roof. The toilets were all falling to bits. They had no proper furniture. They had no play equipment. The gates were falling down. And so I thought, this is a project we can do. And you've got all these adorable little children. They're all school children or pre and preschool children are perfectly turned out in their uniforms. And one thing I really don't understand is in the senior school, the girls wear white knee-length socks. Yeah, everything everywhere is covered in red dust. And I was covered in red dust all the time. But their socks are always brilliant white. And I don't know how they do it. But
pink shirts.
Yeah, beautiful. They are so beautiful. And they were all so excited. They're always so excited to see you, so pleased to see you. And then they are singing songs as well for you. And so I thought, this is the project for us. And then I thought, this is about day one. So no, stop, think, look around. But I just kept coming back to this and back to it and back to it. And so when I came home and presented this to the Rotary Club, we decided that that's what we would go for. So we have re-roofed the place. We have redone all the toilets. Put up new gates, new signage. It's all been painted. We found a local guy, 17-year-old, who'd been orphaned, who is a fantastic artist. So he has painted Rotary logo on the gates. He's painted ABCs on the walls and times tables and all sorts of things. And also he's earned a little bit of money out of that as well.
Fantastic. So how many pupils are in the school?
There are about 50.
About 50. And what age are they?
So they're sort of 3-4 year olds. Same sort of age as you would have a preschool in this country, really.
Yeah. And is it a government school or do they have to pay to go to this?
No, this is a Roman Catholic.
Oh, Roman Catholic.
Catholicism is one of the main religions. The other is Islam. But it doesn't matter if you're an Islamic child or a Roman Catholic child, you can go to the preschool.
Okay.
There's one thing I really discovered is their religious tolerances. The imam goes to preach in the Catholic church and the priest goes to preach in the mosque.
Fantastic.
And they're great friends.
So within the community, there's a mosque and a church, or are there a number of churches?
There's a mosque and a church. They're almost opposite each other on one of the main streets in Medina.
And so in Medina, did you say 5,000 people about?
About 5,000 people, yeah.
So around about the quarter of the size of Cirencester.
Yeah.
So in terms of the project then, can you tell us a little bit more about when you go to the project, what's life like for you? Do you stay with a local family? Do you stay in a hotel and get driven in? How does it work?
They were just finishing it off when we were there. They have actually built a guest house in Medina now. They didn't have anything like that before. But where the church is, there's a compound. Small compound. I say it's a compound, but anybody can wander through it because you come in from the main street from one side, and if you go out the back end of it, you end up walking through to the preschool. And so there's an old Catholic church which is used up as a village hall now. There's the newer church. There is the priest's house. There's a clinic. And there's also what's called the volunteer house, which is like a very basic two-bedroom bungalow, really, which does now have solar panels, so you can have some fans going. Because one of the things that hits you is the heat, does definitely.
And in terms of the climate, so it's hot. So how hot is it? Is it as hot as it has been over the past couple of days in Cirencester? Is it hotter? Is it a different type of heat?
It's hotter. Comes up to about 40. They're just coming in now. They're coming into the rainy season. Where are we? We're just coming into July. The rainy season is sort of August, September, into October. And then it becomes drier again. And then after Christmas, sort of January, February time, they have the winds. So
yes.
Which whips up all the red dust and isn't very nice.
And so in terms of the landscape, looking at the picture that's on the screen, the one by the toy, the roundabout, is it tropical? So is it rainforesty or is it more like sort of grasslands in terms of when you went on your drive from Freetown up to Kamiba to the actual town, what was the landscape like?
Lots of grasslands. They grow lots of corn as well. So lots of grasslands and then some foresty areas. It's not very exciting landscape, to be quite honest.
Is it flat or is it mountainous?
Relatively flat.
Relatively flat. Awesome. Yeah. So, and another question I've got is really about the what life is like on a day-to-day basis there. So when you arrived, you were there for 2 weeks. Obviously, you're going into the projects and you're helping and supporting and, you know, creating. But what's life like for a typical resident of Medina? What do they do? You know, in terms of, do the children work for their families sometimes? Do they work before school? What's a typical day?
Well, children are all expected to go to school. And most of them do. They do work either before school or after school. They have to go and collect all their own water. We've done a lot putting in water wells in various places. Previously they would go down to the river to get water, which is not very safe. Because of snakes and such like. So yes, collecting water, all the cooking is done over open fires. There's a market every day as well, so people would go to get their fresh produce. Although I have to say, there's not a great deal of fresh stuff to get. Or there wasn't currently at that time.
So in terms of the jobs that their parents do, are they working in small businesses? Are they working on the land? What's like the economy like, I guess, in Medina?
Yeah, so I mean, the economy is very poor. But yes, they do work. They do work on the land. And some of them have some independent businesses. We've helped a group of widows to set up a chicken farm so they can produce eggs to sell. There are a lot of people that don't work. There is no work for them.
And in terms of migration, is the do people want to get to the big city? Do they sort of see Freetown as the place where there are better opportunities, or are the youngsters, you know, happy to be in this village? If you're born in that village, do you tend to spend the rest of your life in the village, or is the aspiration to move out into a bigger city or town?
You do spend most of your life there, but it's like with most places and with youngsters, you know, there are ones obviously that want to move away and want to do different things, and the priesthood is very big, so a lot of them do, a lot of the boys do go to become Catholic priests.
And is the a secondary school in Medina if it's 5,000 people, or do they have to go to so there's a secondary school? And have you done any work in the secondary school, or is it just the preschool?
Yes, we did some work in the secondary school. When I went, I went with a nursing friend of mine, and also went with a Japanese lady. Who is a doctor, and very interested in anemia in young women. So we arranged to go to the secondary school where she took some blood samples. We arranged to take some blood samples from some of the girls. and then to give them some iron tablets if they were anemic, and then follow them up a bit later. But we took that opportunity to talk to girls. We did it as girls only, so we took the opportunity to talk to them about periods and about reusable sanitary wear, because obviously sanitary wear is very expensive. They don't have drains. If they had tampons and things, they don't have drains to be able to flush anything away. So they were very interested in a project of reusable sanitary wear, which is partly something that's been set up by a lady in the States and is becoming more common across Africa, and also becoming more common in this country as well, I think. There is what they call period poverty.
Yeah, I was reading something as well about how the girls don't like to go to school when they're on their period, because they may not have access to sanitary towels and things like that, and the association or the embarrassment that they may feel, and so then they miss out on school, which obviously has a big, big impact in terms of that. So thinking about your experience and obviously your preconceptions about the poverty and the savannah and the grasslands and things like that, what really surprised you most about Sierra Leone, about your experience, but about the projects that you've been working on, the people that you've met?
The friendships, I think. I've got so many good friends over there. The gentleman you can see on the right in the picture by the tree, that's Father Sam, who is our coordinator on the ground in Medina. I think because we are a project that hasn't just sort of dropped in, done something and then disappeared, because we do go back and we do have lots of contacts when we're not there as well, I think these friendships build, which works really well. And they don't see that many white faces in Medina, but they realise that what you're there for and what you're doing, and the welcomes and the gifts from people that have got nothing. There's a village, and I think it's this particular village where they've now got a well. There was a problem with bedrock, and we couldn't get the well. We couldn't dig deep enough to get the well. And the project had to be abandoned initially. And we went to meet the elders and the people in the village to explain about the well. They took us down to the river where they had to go to get their water. And so we said, we will get well engineers and we will spend some money and some time to get this sorted. But so they had no well. They welcomed us with open arms, and we left with 4 chickens strapped to the back of Father Sam's motorbike.
Brilliant. It's just, I think Miss Blue would say the same for the experience in Ghana as well, in that the communities just make you feel so welcome immediately.
Yeah.
And there's no sense of, we want things. It's a sense of we want to improve our own lives. We want to sort of move things forward on our own. If you can support us, then that's absolutely brilliant. But so in terms of, they don't want charity, they want empowerment. Yeah, yeah. That's what I felt when I was in Ghana, and I don't know if Miss Blewett feels the same. I think from our conversation she would, but it is very much that we want to move forward together. And so I think it's absolutely fantastic that you've established that community.
And one of the things we do, so when they have a water well installed, they have to pay a contribution towards its upkeep. It's not very much, but they have to pay because they have to take responsibility for that well. It's no good they get to turn around and say, oh, it's broken. It's that whole thing, isn't it, of give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day, give a man a fishing rod and he'll eat for life.
Exactly.
And this is what you need to do. It's not going in, doing good and then leaving. It's going in and helping them to improve and to move forwards themselves, to be able to help themselves, and giving them the tools that they need to be able to help themselves.
Exactly. I think, yeah, so it's so empowering. And obviously from the pictures that we can see here, I'm guessing that's a well that's been installed in the village.
Yeah.
That's there. So how is a tiny town of 5,000 people in the northeast of Sierra Leone possibly connected to Cirencester? How did this even come about, this connection?
Good question. Years ago now, probably 20 or more, I would say, years ago, there was a gynaecologist who worked in Cheltenham General. And I'm not quite sure how, but he had links with a hospital in Cambia in Sierra Leone, which is about 4 hours from Medina. And so people from the hospital would go and work for a couple of weeks doing operations or doing all sorts of different things in the hospital. Rohit Sethi used to be an anaesthetist as well as a GP and worked at Cheltenham General, so got involved in going to this. And he and his wife Veronica went to work in the hospital in Cambia. Didn't really like it very much, didn't really enjoy it, didn't really think maybe it was right. They happened to be out and about one day and they bumped into a Benedictine monk called Brother Bruno, who is an Italian, larger than life character. Got talking to him and he said, come and see where I'm based, come and see my project, what I'm trying to do in this place called Medina. And he was, at that time, he was the priest as well for Medina. And that's how it started. So they went, they got to know him and liked what he was trying to do and came back and decided to set something up.
Phenomenal. So how do you keep in touch? Because you go at certain times of the year, I guess, I think you said you're going in October and...
Hopefully.
How do you keep in touch throughout the rest of the year to keep that community going? So obviously if you only went for 2 weeks, you wouldn't be able to sort of get the development that you wanted sort of going along. So how do you keep in touch?
So Veronica, Rohit's wife, usually goes for about 5 or 6 weeks at a time. We also work closely. There's a place called McKenney, where there is a hospital, and we work quite closely with them as well. And we use WhatsApp.
Brilliant. Okay, so you've got a WhatsApp group.
We've got WhatsApp groups. I don't know how they can ever have managed before they have mobile phones, but everybody over there has a mobile phone. We use WhatsApp, a lot of us are on Facebook as well. And these pictures that you've got now, these are pictures that Sam sent probably a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, brilliant.
So we get lots of pictures through. And if there's anything more major, then we will email as well.
So in terms of WhatsApp, that presumes obviously that there's Wi-Fi connection, but also electricity. Has the town got 100% electricity? Is there electricity in every home or the certain buildings?
Only certain places. It is beginning to increase, and it's solar power.
Oh, brilliant. Okay. And is that...
Makes sense, really.
Yeah. And is that something that the projects that you've been involved in has actually introduced?
No, we haven't. So far, there is a government scheme, I believe, to get solar power into more places. There's also in Medina for people that haven't got power. There's a little shack shop on the main street where you can buy SIM cards for your mobile phone, you can buy batteries, you can buy solar panels, you can have a beer and watch the television.
Okay.
And he sells solar panels, and you can also go and charge your phone and such like there. So, yeah.
Okay, brilliant stuff. So I'm going to go through some of the slides about the different aspects of the project. So if the first one's about education. So you've talked about the preschool and you've talked about the work that you've done with the secondary girls in terms of period poverty, but also the anemia. Is there anything else about education that, that you would like to share with the group?
I think they do have increased risks of teenage pregnancy, and if a girl is pregnant, that's it. She doesn't go to school when she's pregnant, and she actually doesn't go back to school ever again. So so that's that can be a bit of an issue. There is another charity that does work a lot of work all over Africa. It's called School in a Bag.
Okay, what's that?
So School in a Bag is a charity based down in Yeovil, run by a very nice young man who was in Thailand at the time of the tsunami.
Oh, yeah.
And lost his brother. And so set up this charity in memory of his brother. And they send, basically School in a Bag is your pens, your pencils, your paper, all the things you need to be able to go to school in a bag.
Oh, brilliant.
These have been shipped all over the world, and we've also done some work with them to get them to Medina.
Oh, that sounds superb. So I think that's definitely one that we could check out then as well in terms of supporting. And water wells and sanitation. So can you give us a little bit of an idea about the importance of these water wells and having that sanitation?
Yes. So as I say, the importance of water wells is obviously, you know, to have clean clean water to either drink or cook with. To not have to go down to the river to collect the water. Rivers, the ways down to the river are very often narrow little tracks with shrubbery on either side, so you don't know when a cobra might pop its head out. It's doing that. And also, previously you might have had to walk a very long way to get to the river as well, so it's putting in water wells in lots of places and making sure the wells work. And one of the first things that they noticed when they went to Medina is there's lots of tummy upsets to do with water, and toilets are important as well, because obviously people would previously just go in the in the local bushes, which is not very hygienic. We've installed a lot of what they call long drop toilets, so you have to and the Help Medina will supply the materials for people for these toilets. They have to then dig the pits and help to construct it themselves, so they are it's not just there and given to them, so they do have to show their willingness to help to install toilets.
And does that help in terms of attendance at school and things like that as well? Because obviously to go and collect the water, and you said that it's quite a long way from the rivers, has that helped them to like have more time, or did they just have to get up really, really early to go and get it?
No, they are up early anyway, but yes, it has improved attendance, because obviously the children aren't then spending ages, because it's usually the children's job to go and get the water.
Yeah, so it's freed up that time, which is really important. And yeah. In the picture, you see all girls. Is that the job of a girl, or is that just a coincidence in that picture?
Yeah, it does seem to be the job of the girl, yes.
Okay, brilliant stuff. So next one then, we've got about football. So do you want to tell me a little bit about football and why this is so important as a project?
I know nothing about football.
Oh, okay.
But Rohit Sethi is very, very keen on football.
Yeah.
But and they have a football ground, where you can see in the background, and they love to play football. Very often, depending on who goes out, we will set up teams for matches. There is also on a Saturday, they love to watch the football, and they watch football from all over the world, but they love to watch all the English football. And so for about, I think it's about 10p or something like that, you can go to this corrugated, quite large corrugated hut, which is absolutely boiling. And they have three large screens up with all the with three different football matches on.
And Spanish football as well, I guess.
Yes, yeah,
I've met lots of Barcelona and Real Madrid fans in Ghana last year as well.
Yeah, from everywhere. So
football, the national sport, would you say?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, so again, last year in Ghana, our peoples had a game against a girls' team, but this girls' team actually, they're in a league, and some of them will get to play for like national level as well. So, yeah, that was interesting. They showed us how to do it, I think. It was quite a full-on match. So the next one is elderly care. Why is that important as a project?
So elderly, obviously, the life expectancy in Medina is, in Sierra Leone is lower than it would be here. But if you've got elderly that are on their own, so they don't have any family for whatever reason, it's very hard for them to support themselves. So we provide, we give them free healthcare, because you do have to pay, if you can, you have to pay towards your healthcare in Medina, whether you go to the government clinic or whether you come to our clinic. They're all given allocation of rice every 6 months, and also provide them with some clothing once a year. And we have a register of the elderly, and people get recommended that maybe that should be on the register. We have a wonderful guy called Mr. Mambi, who sorts out the register and sorts out the making sure that they get their clothes and their rice.
So there wouldn't be a like a pension system. They wouldn't get that support from the government. There's healthcare, but it would be
The healthcare. If they went to the government clinic, they would still have to pay for their healthcare. So if they come to our clinic, then we will treat them. We will do what we can for free.
Okay. So in terms of our students at Deer Park School, some of them have already looked at this about the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and what's being done globally to try and make the world a more equal place and to make sure that everybody has got these basics in life. So we can see sort of on the screen that we've got the different ideas about zero hunger and good health and well-being and quality education. So there's lots and lots of connections to what you've been saying about the projects that you're doing, which help to achieve these, but in that sustainable way. So you might not be able to answer this question, but if they could have a wish list in Medina, what do you think would be at the top? What would be their priority in trying to sort out in terms of making life better for the 5,000 people that live there?
I think probably at the top of their wish list would be to have a government that wasn't corrupt.
Okay, so can you explain about corruption then?
They had elections in Medina recently. If that was last year, I can't remember, the time goes by so fast. But it's a case of the people that get into power are usually creaming stuff off for themselves. All sorts of levels. You will find corruption. They're out for themselves, really. The best what they can do for their people, really.
Yeah. So I guess that links to the strong institutions and making sure that the local people are being represented there. So it's a democracy. People vote.
Yeah, they do.
But it's not always in.
No, does the result always come out? Yeah,
okay.
True. One of the things we would dearly love to do is to be able to send more stuff to Medina. And when we go, we take two large suitcases each, and you don't take much for yourself. You cram as much other stuff in as you possibly can. But things like if we wanted to send a shipping container of stuff over, you can't get it through the port. It will disappear. If you can actually manage to land it, most of it will then have vanished as it goes through customs. You've got no guarantees that things will get to where you want them to be.
So it is that focus on when you're there, actually on project, making sure that the local people are getting the skills that they need, the tools that they need to be able to run them for when you're not there. So almost like our role is to build awareness and to support, virtually almost in terms of that way. Just top of my head, how's COVID had an impact, or has COVID had an impact on the community?
Not hugely. They have had they had one case actually in Medina, and that was somebody who'd travelled back from Freetown.
Okay.
But what we've done, we put some money for the team over there so they could go out and teach about hand sanitation, social distancing. Medina is very close to the Guinea border, and the borders are, really fairly open.
Yeah.
So trying to discourage people from crossing borders. So it has worked quite well.
And obviously because of the Ebola outbreaks, 2014, 15, 16 and 18, their awareness of virus and spreading and, lockdown experience, I guess they've had way more than we've had.
Yes, they have it in a lot of ways. With Ebola, so the really serious outbreak was in 2015. It was all over the country, so we did lose people in Medina from Ebola. The thing that you have to break down there is the barriers. There is a lot of myths and misconceptions about Ebola amongst local people, and there is lots of views that you're encouraging them to use soap and water to wash, but there is a view that it's a white person's disease, and they have put the disease in the soap that the white people are providing, so you shouldn't use the soap. There's still a lot of tribal medicine. You will go and see the local witch doctor really for cures and things, which obviously don't work.
Usually. So in terms of like the medicines from like local plants and things like that, or
they will use local plants obviously, there are benefits in some of those things,
So in terms of questions, have we got anyone that's got a question? Has anyone written anything into the chat that they want to ask? So Nigel's question was about how is Sierra Leone different to other West African nations? So obviously that's an absolutely brilliant question, and that's something that we can do a little bit more research on in terms of using data, using statistics, and that does link into the homework that I'm going to very, very quickly talk about here as well. So for your homework this week, you're going to be using a brilliant website called Dollar Street, and there's a TED talk to watch. It's a 15-minute talk, and it's by Ola Rosling, who is the daughter of Hans Rosling, who's a very, very famous statistician, and he talked a lot about how development is not quite like it's not as clear cut as we may have thought. There are places in the world that are rich and places that are poor. There's a lot more sort of complexity to that. And so part of your homework is going to be to watch this video, and the other part of your homework is to use Dollar Street. Now, Dollar Street is thousands and thousands and thousands of pictures which tell you about life in different parts of the world. So that would be a really good one for you to use to compare Sierra Leone, or to compare like with West African nations, or just to compare different parts of the world that are there as well. So any questions? Oh, so great question there. I think if I'm Tom, is that Tom Ellen or Torby, is it? So what were the impacts of the Civil War? Thanks, Torby. Impacts of the Civil War, Lynn. What damage did it cause?
Huge. It probably set Sierra Leone back by about 20 years. They were doing quite well in terms of infrastructure and moving forward with road constructions and all sorts of things. And it did set them back hugely. And a lot of it was also to do with diamonds. And that was a lot of the cause of the Civil War.
So diamonds, the diamond mines in
There's a film. I'm not quite sure if it has, how suitable it would be for everybody, but there's a film called Blood Diamond.
Oh yeah,
Leonardo DiCaprio. I think you're right. Yes, really explains a lot about the Civil War.
And so that took place between 1991 and 2002. So the past 20 years of peace. But is this, was it geographical in terms of, was it north or south, or was it more to do with just like, was it a government overthrown or?
Yeah, it was just everywhere, I think. Families against families, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and like people being displaced and obviously
The priesthood also really struggled, and there was lots of starvation, and the priests were trying to help people, but then the government soldiers would come and people would disappear, and
so great question.
I know, huge
tremendous impact there, tremendous impact. Someone's asked, what language do they speak? What's the main language in Sierra Leone?
English, mainly.
Yeah, because it was a British colony.
It was a British colony.
1961.
Yeah. And then the British sort of abandoned them, really, I think.
In terms of the independence, or?
Yes. Basically, you're independent. You can get on with it now. And so then, of course, it's a struggle.
And it was one of the earliest colonies as well. It's 1808. It's been under sort of colonial rule for a very long time. Questions. Do most people in Sierra Leone live in rural or urban areas?
Rural.
So it's mainly a rural population.
Rural, yes. Yeah. I mean, the capital, Freetown, is quite sizable. Was also used to be known as the Dark City, because it was one of the only capital cities in the world that didn't have any electric light. Wow. For a very long time. But yes, it is mainly rural.
Okay, right. Great question again. We've got a question. Because of COVID, do they social distance?
They try.
Yeah. In terms of try like we try, or
yes, probably. Yes. Okay. Yeah, they do try. They have been educated. Well, I think in Medina, they've certainly been educated about social distancing. I would think, like in Freetown, it's not going to happen because there are so many people in Freetown. Yeah.
Great question. And they're not in lockdown, are they? They're not the city.
No,
We've experienced for 12 weeks. We've got a question about food. What sort of food do they eat? So, like a typical dish, do they eat lots of like corn? So that's a grain, or?
When we were there, we ate a lot of eggs and sardines. But but locally, yes, they eat a lot of sort of maize, that sort of thing. I'm just trying to think, really. Yeah, they don't have a lot in the way of meat. let's say, slaughter a chicken or a goat or something like that. They do do very good goat stew, I have to say. And we did come home. We've been to do an outreach clinic about 2 hours away, and we did come home with a goat strapped to the roof.
Oh, I've got
a live goat strapped to the roof.
Oh, I'd have to be, I'd be quite upset if I had to eat goat. Do they eat much rice, or is corn their main staple?
Corn more than rice. There's rice as well.
Because of the climate and what can grow more easily.
Yeah.
Question about hunting. Do they go and hunt, or is that not something that happens?
Not that I know of.
No? Okay. What are their homes like?
So most places are mud construction with corrugated roofs. They're usually fairly dark, fairly small. Some of it's one room, or you know, if you're slightly more affluent, you would have something a little bit bigger. But
are there many snakes near the school? Did you see a snake?
I didn't see a snake, but I saw somebody who's been bitten by a snake.
Ooh.
We spent a morning at there's a government health clinic, and so we spent a morning there, and somebody came in who, we weren't 100% sure, but they'd been working in the fields, and they'd been bitten by something, and they thought they'd been bitten by a snake, so they had to be treated without venom. Because it's black mambas are the main snakes that they have.
Absolutely,
over there.
They are
very deadly. Yeah.
We've got a question. How many people would live in a house? So in terms of, would it just be one family or extended family within one home?
It can be extended families. Yeah. So they're very much. So obviously we do have the projects for the elderly, but if you're elderly and you have family, then you will live with your family. So yes, it can be quite a few people in one house.
Super. Right, we've still got questions coming through. Any wildfires did you experience? Was that something, or with the rains, do they come quite regularly so they don't have those wildfires?
I don't know if they have wildfires or not. And they do have some very spectacular storms, but no, yeah. I can't ask you that about wildfires, I'm afraid.
And then we've got, do they build their houses, or do they buy it from someone else? So do they build the house that they live in?
A bit of both. Obviously, you know, they can build more houses, but... but otherwise, yes, they do. When a place becomes vacant,
The property. So they would own the land that the house is built
usually
on.
Usually, they own the land. They own a bit of land, and then they build a house on it. Yeah, because the rowit has been given some land to build his house on for when he retires and spends.
Oh, brilliant! There. we've got black mambas kill 20 adult men in 20 minutes with a single drop of venom. Just so we know how deadly they are. We've got a question. Is smoking common?
Yes.
Many people smoke. Smoking's common.
Yeah.
Is it common amongst men and women, or is it more of a male thing?
I'd probably say it's more of a male thing.
Like a social...
Yes, they do.
Infant mortality question. Yeah, so is infant mortality rate high? So, yeah, going back to the work that we looked at on the... How does it compare to the UK? Infant mortality rates would be high, particularly in the rural areas, I guess, if they've got less access to healthcare and...
Yeah. And malaria is very, particularly among, is very, very common.
So in terms of malaria, do they just use nets? Because they use anti-malaria, so they wouldn't even have access to nets, or...?
A lot of them haven't got access to nets.
How long did it take to fix the school?
We're still doing bits because one of the issues we're having at the moment is trying to get playground equipment and trying to get playground equipment either to buy it locally because we can't get it in, so we can't. So one of the things we're going to look at when we go over, hopefully, is maybe building some playground equipment. The actual main part of the project probably took about 9 months to do altogether. Using all local tradespeople. When I go at the end of the year, I'm going with a friend of mine who is also a Rotarian but also involved in the Men's Shed project. I don't know if you've heard of that. Mm-hmm. It's a project that I think they're all over the place, but Men's Shed is run in Cirencester behind the fire station once a week, and it's for men that have retired. Obviously they're not meeting at the moment, but it's for men that have retired, and basically, you know, very often when men retire they're more at a loose end maybe than women are, and so it's for them to have social interaction and also to build things and repair tools. And so we're looking at a way of maybe getting the Men's Shed involved in helping to sort playground equipment.
So I guess my last question for you, Lynn, is can we get involved? Is there anything that we can be doing as individuals or as a school community to help get involved and support Medina?
Absolutely, yes. Obviously, we're always, like all charities, we're always looking for donations. But also, since they have recently built a guest house in Medina a couple of years ago now, and one of our limitations to be able to take more people out is there's nowhere for people to stay, because all we have at the compound is the two-bedroom small house. But with the guest house, then more people would be able to go. And last year they took I think it was about five of them went, final year medical students went over to do some work. So you could become more involved in looking at projects and things that you might want to do and maybe to visit.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today, Lynn. We've got about a minute to go. Did you want to talk about the Indigo project just before we sign out?
Quickly wanted just to mention about Indigo. Some of you might know, have heard of Indigo, which is our drop-in clinic on a Thursday afternoon down at the Phoenix Surgery on Chesterton Lane. Unfortunately, due to COVID, it's been suspended because nobody is allowed to just drop in for an appointment anymore, but we are available on the phone, and if you want, and we can also do some texting services as well if you need any help or advice.
I can put that on. We can make sure that goes onto the school website as well in terms of the newsletter, and link that into what we've done today.
And Indigo is open to anybody. It's not just Phoenix surgery patients. It can be for anybody from anywhere.
Brilliant. I mean, we've still got some questions coming through, so would it be okay, Lynn, if I emailed you those questions and sort of anything else that comes up over the next couple of days, and then I can update them? Brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. If this was live, there'd be a tremendous round of applause now. So thank you so much and take care. So Year 8, just need to check out Show My Homework for your homework, and I'll have the deadlines of when that's due in as well. And thank you to everyone that's got involved today. So if you want to sign out, that's great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.